Councilman Hilty, Councilman Molliver, Mayor Kent Quinn, myself, John McLeod, and Councilman Musley. So, all that, Mr. Manager, would you like to begin?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Let's begin with the garbage transfer station. I'm going to invite Mark Mondell, Assistant City Manager of Community Development, to take the lead.
Thank you, Matt. This is an issue that we would like to discuss with City Council today. We've had a few potential interested parties in establishing garbage transfer stations in the city limits. Our current code precludes that type of use. And Mr. Chigazola would like to walk you through the use, some of the pros and cons and the definitions in our code. And we're seeking some consensus or some of your input on this issue. Ty?
Ty Chigazola, Growth Management Director. Like Mark said, we're going to try to just give you kind of a brief overview of kind of the zoning issues related to some of the uses that are not in our code and some of the uses that are presently in our code. First page, if you look at it, it talks about what's not allowed in the city's code. We don't allow landfills. We don't have any definitions, landfills. We don't allow a construction and debris landfill, or we don't allow a garbage transfer station. Back when the code was written back in the early 90s with some changes, there was some talk about allowing those type of uses. Some of them were discussed, but it was made a consensus at that time to not to allow a landfill or a garbage transfer station or a C&D landfill at the time. The code does allow, in 1992, we did put a, the next slide is a little bit about the C&D landfill. A few years ago, in 2009, we did have a proposal to allow a C&D landfill in the city's code. It was going to be an M2 or an M3 use with criteria. The ordinance was approved by City Council, but at the time, the mayor, Mayor Ewers, vetoed the ordinance. So right now, we still, as I said before, we don't have a use that it would allow a C&D landfill. We do have a C&D landfill, in essence, in the city. It's Friends Recycling, and they've been a non-conforming use for many years off of Northwest 27th Avenue, meaning they're not allowed to expand. They're in an M1. At the time, their application, along with the code amendment, was going to talk about them rezoning a larger piece of property in order to expand the Friends Recycling. Council did not approve that zoning application, but they did approve to allow the use in the code. But again, like I said, the mayor did veto it at the time. And again, what does the code do? Does allow? It allows a recycling center. At the time when, again, this was written in 1992, recycling center was kind of what we started originally with the city doing with the Iggy bins, and people would drop off their recycling either to a location or they would drop it off to these collection points, as we called them, and they were allowed in multiple areas throughout the city. But the recycling center at the time was the one off of Northwest 27th Avenue. And it was called Ocala Recycling Center. So that was kind of the use, and the next picture shows it. And that's kind of the use that we were talking about, where people either dropped off their recyclables, their tin cans, they were already separated. At the time, that was the type of recycling. We didn't have any single stream recycling or any collection at people's homes. Everything was driven to the facility. And recycling wasn't that big of a use at that point. Recycling changes since 1992. The industry, again, has changed. Now we have single stream recycling, meaning everything is put out at the curb, and then it's separated once it gets to the facility. And then kind of this is what the industry calls as a clean materials recovery facility, or a clean MRF, as it was referred to. And again, it's already been separated from the solid waste at the curb with the cans. As you know, we've been doing it for the last 2 years. And these type of facilities are allowed, again, in the city. They're allowed in the M1, the M2, the M3. And approximately 10% of the materials that is recycled is solid waste. As you know, some people throw their regular garbage into the recyclable. It has to be separated, but primarily the use is for recyclables. It's not for solid waste or yard waste. So that's a key point, is that this use is allowed outright in an M1. There's no criteria put on it. It's not a special exception. We do have a new proposed recycling center going in. It's off of Northwest 10th Street around the county jail. And again, this is under site plan review. And again, it's for a cleaner, for a recycling center where everything is from Waste Pro, where our recyclables will go. It will go there, they will separate them, and then if there's any solid waste, the solid waste would be transported either to a transfer station or to the landfill. So the issue of the garbage transfer station, or a waste transfer station, the more politically correct name for it. We've been getting a lot of phone calls over the last few years. We've had inquiries about, can we allow a garbage transfer station in the city? We do, since the city, I think it was a contract that the mayor worked on quite a few years ago with John Zobler, we started taking our garbage to a garbage transfer station. That station is located in the county. It's a special use permit in the county. It's just right outside the city limits on 52nd and US 441. But right now, we don't have any garbage transfer stations. For the years, we've been telling people if they come in, it's not allowed in the city. But again, the industry has changed, and so that's part of the reasons why we're here, is to try to give you an update of kind of the blending between the garbage transfer station, the recycling centers. So this is kind of a definition of a garbage transfer station. Again, it is where the waste goes to the facility. It goes real, once it gets there, it's immediately taken from the smaller trucks, or it's separated. And then as quick as possible, taken to larger trucks and taken to the landfill. Again, it does not spend a lot of time there. It doesn't spend days and days where it could cause problems. But again, it's a pretty quick process where they take it from the smaller trucks, drop it off, then it's taken out to the larger trucks for the transfer station. And then the next slide again shows a little bit of a diagram. It is, there you are at the curbside, you have your recyclables, you have your waste. It's taken by a private hauler to the city, taken to the transfer station. our example of a transfer station is the one at 52nd and 441 that the city uses. And then it's hauled off on larger trucks to an out of county or out of state landfill. Ours is in Georgia. So that's kind of the typical process. Some photos of our existing transfer station there at 52nd. Again, it was an old warehouse. Seems to work pretty well. It's not around a lot of residential. It's pretty far set back off the road, and they have good transportation network there, and it can support a lot of trips. The next slide is a picture of a transfer station. It's an out-of-state facility. I looked at a number of them. This was a good example. It's quite large. Looks like a very nice facility. You can see, and that's why I chose that, they try to clean that floor on a daily basis, where they're trying to get the materials in as quick as possible, then out. And then you can see in the next slide, the bottom slide is the same facility, looking through the mirror, where you can see that you can see that the garbage is in, the waste is in there, and then they move it out and it's clean at the top. So that's a good picture of one out of state. I don't remember exact location where that was. And again, why are transfer stations needed? Again, they're becoming much more popular throughout the country. It's hard siting landfills. So not every community or county have landfills. So it's become a much more popular use over the last 10 years or so. And again, for transportation costs, the closer the garbage transfer station is into your market, it's easier because you're using less fuel. And less time and maintenance and everything to get there. So the quicker you get
it from the residence or the commercial to the transfer station, the less costly it will be. So if you were, your transfer station was in another county or a far away, then it's going to be costly more for the city and their contract if we continue to go down that route. And then there's a list of advantages. Again, a lot of them are related to the transportation costs. Again, it gives elected officials some flexibility and options where you don't have to, again, site a landfill. A transfer station is much easier process to site than, not to say it's not difficult, but it's much easier than a landfill. The disadvantages, again, it's a sensitive issue and challenging issue. I put in here for both somebody living nearby or as well as the elected officials, as we saw with the Friends application when we tried to do the expansion at the C&D landfill. There's a lot of noise, truck traffic, equipment in nearby when you're at that type of facility. There's some potential for odor, birds, rodents, litter, dust, things typical associated with this kind of use. Increased traffic around the facility. It helps when you have a transfer station throughout the overall network, but around the facility, it gets a little bit more problem. But any of these issues, as I look through different communities, all these issues can be addressed as part of the review process, the development process, how we want to go about, if we want to go about creating something. So the disadvantages can be addressed. Statistics, there's our statistics in terms of how many trips go to the landfill and the cost per ton. That's just kind of just give you an overview of where we are. Our garbage does go down to the transfer station at 52nd. Our recycling does right now go to Friends, our yard. And our recycling materials go to Friends, and eventually it will go to the new Waste Pro MRF that's being reviewed right now and be under construction soon. Zoning options, and my last slide, and we'll talk a little bit about the map. One, we could continue not to address the issue. Not addressing it means it's not allowed in the city, so nothing would change that. Another option would be for City Council to direct staff to draft an ordinance to look at citing a garbage transfer station in the code and looking at either as a permitted use, special exception, or limited to either some or all of the zones in the industrial. Those are some of the things that we could work out if we decide to go that route with an ordinance. Looking through it, many communities and most of the materials we've looked at say that the communities usually, if you don't go down the road where you try to get the community input up front with citizens and local groups, it may be harder to do it. A lot of communities, I think one was in Tallahassee, they had cited for a location, then the neighbors got involved, and then it didn't end up going at that location, and they had a recite, and they started a working group to kind of address and mitigate some of those issues. So a lot of communities are going that route with this use. So that's one option. And again, the next map is looking at the different zones that we have, the M1, the M2, and the M3. Again, some of those zones may change with as we go through the last round of the vision changes we may now consolidate into two zones. That's still to be determined. But this gives you an idea of what's allowed in terms of would be possibly for some of the uses that some of the areas that we could, if we want to put it in a code, this is where they would go at. Any questions or?
No, so what you need from us is direction, whether to do nothing or to
draft an ordinance. Or I could come back. I mean, there's nothing, I mean, we're not looking for any formal recommendation. We just kind of get a feel. Do you want further information? There's people here from the industry, and I think they want to talk a little bit about the blending of what a clean MRF is versus what a waste transfer and a or what they call is a dirty MRF, where there's recyclable materials that come into a waste transfer station and they're taken out.
I mean, I for one would like to eventually see this put somewhere in the code.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like it's some sort of an albatross sticking out there with no code by it. So I would like to see that personally, but we'll see what everyone else has to say. Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, and I'd like to see us do this too. And I think one of the things you talked about, this industry's changed since 2009 when we did this, and I was the third vote on that 3-2 vote to not have the C&D landfills in the city. But as far as the transfer station, we're talking about solid waste, correct?
It's solid waste. It's waste. Okay. I mean, it's household garbage. I mean, there's certain things that the transfer station they're not allowed, like batteries or tires or stuff like that.
Yeah,
but this is your traditional waste product, the recyclables.
Yeah, I think we definitely need to move forward on this and locate one somewhere. I know there are people in the industry that are looking to partner with us, and I think we need to explore all those possibilities. So yeah, I'd definitely be in favor of this.
Council members, do you have any comments? You want me to take public comment?
I'd like you to take public comment.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
So we're going to take some public comment now. Let's try to keep this, because it's a work session, let's try to keep this within reason because we got several topics to do today and we have to be out of here by 1 o'clock. So, who's first? Need your name and address, Mr. Fiorella.
Hi, I'm Glenn Fiorella, 838 Southeast 3rd Street in Ocala. I purchased a piece of property that may make this a little easier for everybody to digest this. It's M1. It butts up to Friends Recycling. If you know where Friends Recycling is, off 27th. And what I'd like to build is a MRF, Materials Recovery Facility, which is a recycling facility. And I think what we can do, it's going to be a clean facility. DEP controls every single thing we do, not a transfer station, but a materials recovery facility, which basically in a nutshell says we're here to recycle. You bring it, whether it's household, commercial, whatever the situation may be, we'll go through, we'll pick out what can be salvaged, what can be recycled. Of course, the residual, what's left, that has to be transferred to a solid waste facility, preferably a landfill. I think mine's a much easier sale because number one, M1, which is what my property is when I purchased it, and it says recycling right in there. As we all know, the code is somewhat vague, but I think this can be a win-win for everyone. I'm gonna paint a real quick picture for you if you don't mind. Friends Recycling, because I butt up to them, it fits like a glove. They kind of go hand in hand. That's where your yard waste is going now, sir. Your trucks are traveling, really, you're butting up to the property with which I own. There's a scale house right there where your trucks are weighed. Well, there's an easement on that where I own it, as does Friends Recycling. So if you can paint the picture that you've got a vehicle traveling on that same road that it traveled prior to this, if it's yard waste, it goes straight to Friends Recycling. If it's something else that we can take out of the mix, it makes a left and it comes to Personalized Waste Facility. One thing that I would like to say that I'm hoping can happen, because I am also a resident of the city of Ocala. Right now, you're currently shipping everything to another facility. And do you know what the tonnage, what you're paying per ton on that material?
About 42 or 40 some odd dollars,
43.
45, 51. I say that because it's a high dollar. In my view, it's a high dollar. My hope is that when we're up and running and your time comes to rebid that contract, now you'll have two vendors. And even if I come in second place, if nothing else, we've helped possibly lower their bid for the city of Ocala residents. So there can be a real windfall for everyone, not only me as a business person, but the citizens of the city of Ocala can also win on this. So my thought is, and I've discussed this with Ty, all I'd like to know is what do you want on your site plan, because my property is owned for recycling, anything else you want so I can hear it and get underway. And that's why I'm really here today, to see just what you need on your site plan and any other particulars you need, not for a transfer station, but for an all-purpose MRF, Materials Recovery Facility. If I can be directed in that, I can be up and running and hopefully make this a win-win for everybody.
Okay. Any questions?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Catherine, what is going on at the transfer station we're using right now, which is the old pipe plant? Is there any material recovery going on there, or is it simply transfer?
I'd have to defer that question to Dwayne Drake. He's our manager of sanitation.
Dwayne Drake, Sanitation Division Head, City of Ocala. Right now, everything that we take to the transfer station is simply transferred out.
Okay.
It goes transferred up to Valdosta. If they take anything out of it, we're not aware of it. It may be large items that they take out, but we're not aware of any recycling effort that takes place down there.
Okay. Question.
Yes.
If there was a commercial MRF and we were, and they were taking the materials out, how much would that save the City of Ocala? Because now we're transferring, I'm guessing, a lot less waste to the landfill.
Yeah, of course, anything that's diverted, obviously, that's savings that we have on that 45, 51 a ton that we pay. So anything you can do to, you know, as we increase that diversion rate, we pay less. When you talk about, you know, a dirty MRF, for example, where you separate things out, of course, there's the potential for more savings because then they're removing other recyclables out there that residents may not have recycled. The opportunity is there for savings, definitely.
Follow-up question, I guess, Mr. Fiorello.
What? Yes, John.
I guess my question is, how much would you anticipate a commercial MRF taking out percentage-wise? And I know we're using rough numbers, but, I mean, what would you?
Industry standards are 10 to 15%.
Can I ask a follow-up question too then?
Absolutely.
Because we already, though, have the recycling effort. So you're saying, Mr. Fiorello, that you think you can still take 10% out of what comes in from the trash?
No, that's from the trash itself.
From the trash itself.
Commercial accounts that you have, the businesses here in the city, mm-hmm. or the residences. Got to remember, you're taking out, how can I say this in a nice way? Not everyone recycles, okay? And sometimes we get lazy and you just put it in the same green bin as opposed to the tan-colored one. So what comes across the scale house, there's a very good chance we can get a good 10 to 15% more out of that. Because some people just are not going to recycle. It's a fact of life. But on your commercial accounts also, take that one into consideration. Most commercial accounts, the best you're going to see is a dumpster for newspaper or cardboard. So that's got a lot of recyclables. In construction, which is, you see the big roll-off containers, because I'm also a general contractor, I'm just going to pick on the last pull they usually do. It's slap full of cardboard and products along that nature. Look at all the recycling that we can do to divert all that from going to a landfill. I think the more you think about this, the more avenues you're going to see are available for us.
Dwayne, based on the 10 to 15% number, is there any way you could get back to us of what estimated savings that could be for us?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, and let me ask you a question. So where would the solid waste that's brought to this transfer station go, Glenn?
Right now I've got a possibility of two options. They're going to be transferred to another landfill, not baseline landfill, it'll be out of Marion County.
Be out of Marion County?
Yes,
where would that be?
I'd rather not show on my hands at this stage of the game, but, you know, it'll be outside of Marion County.
Okay. So how would this, Catherine, how would this affect our contract with Veolia?
At this time, it wouldn't. You know, we're with Veolia, I think, until 2017, 2018.
Okay.
So it wouldn't affect it. And one other point I think needs to be made is we do curbside recycling.
Right.
And then a commercial MRF like this, even if they're pulling materials out, currently we don't realize any savings ourselves from that. That's how they realize their profits, is by pulling that additional material out and selling it. So that would depend on the type of contract that we come to an agreement with whichever company we use.
Okay, but you're right now we take our solid waste to Veolia.
Correct.
They take it, put it on a truck, take it to Valdosta.
Correct.
So you're
correct.
Saying this wouldn't affect our contract with them at all?
Not the current
so
contract.
Okay, so we could take it to his transfer station. He's going to put it on a truck and take it to some undisclosed location, and that would be okay under the current contract
no.
we have with Veolia. Hold on. when they're under the current contract we have with Biola. We could transfer that flow away from Biola, take it to his transfer station, then he could put it on a truck and take it somewhere else, and that would be okay.
Our contract is with Veolia, and as far as the transfer station, we didn't, in the contract, we don't indicate which transfer station they would need to use.
Okay. So you could do what I just described with Glenn, correct?
Only if Veolia agreed to that. It's a
that part. Why would they agree to it?
That's the point. We have a contract, exclusive contract with Veolia, as I understand it, to accept our solid waste through 2017, 2018.
Yeah. Right.
And once that expires, the council will have the discretion of renegotiating that with a different vendor.
So we're talking about 3 years from then.
Yeah.
Right. And it, I'm confirmed, well, it is 2018.
And there was another provision in the contract that we talked about here one night that said if there was any new technology that came forward that we could terminate the contract. One of the technologies that we talked about was a new landfill. And one of the things that we talked about, if that would be okay, what I just described would also be okay, is to have another transfer station here in Ocala and take it to Summerfield, which was Charlie Dean's landfill. And which I've got that copy of that on my desk that was transcribed, with that language in there. So that's what I was saying. There are a lot of options that are available. We need to look at all of them. If one of those options is to change now, we need to look at, doing it. The contract allows it, which based on what, we talked about that night, it does allow it.
Well, it depends on what the technology is.
Well,
the benefits
was one of those technologies because I specifically asked the question, does this include new landfills? And they said, yes, it's in the contract.
Okay.
Which I'll get you the
Yeah, we'll be happy to look at that. One of the benefits that we have identified is obviously competition. When it does come time to issue an RFP, it's always good to have additional competition,
sure.
And that usually generates savings for the
absolutely.
City.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. We need to look at all our options.
We would certainly want Pat to opine on that contract to see what flexibility we do have and don't have.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, he has, but, I mean, I'll give you the copy of it.
We could almost have a whole other work session just on that.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
whole subject. And maybe that's what we should do.
I think so. If we look at what we were asked here today, was just to allow staff to expand. I mean,
yeah,
rather than making this decision on a new one.
Yeah,
that's what we need to do is just give them direction, come back with more answers.
Absolutely. I agree. We need to probably do that.
The question, of course, is going to be where you choose to expand that type of use at.
Right.
Generally, people who live nearby are going to probably resist that, right? So the question becomes what designation mm-hmm. is going to be afforded the opportunity to allow this type of use in it.
Well, I think that's where Ty's going to come back
with. Because we don't know where the destination is. We got a map here, but I mean,
right.
He's going to come back with his recommendations, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I just want to clarify what Mr. Fiorello said is, I mean, there's right now what the code allows you to have is a recycling center. And that means it's recyclable materials that can be transformed and reused for another thing. It doesn't talk about allowing waste. Now, we understand because of the single stream recycling, there's a small percentage of waste that goes to the facility, the recycling center, then it's taken somewhere else. That is the only use right now he can have unless we change the code. That's, we confirmed that with Jimmy. We cannot allow somebody to have primarily a yard waste or garbage into the facility and taking out 10 to 15% of recycling. We can't allow that. That's not allowed in the code. That's why you would have to amend the code to add a new use or redo the definition of recycling.
But Mr. Fiorello is conforming under the present code. Is that what you're telling me?
If he wants to do what Waste Pro is doing, a clean MRF mm-hmm. where you could, all your recyclables, when you pick them up from the city, they would go there. And then, yes, if there's some waste, if somebody puts some garbage in there, some food products or something, we understand because the way the industry works now, that there's maybe 10% of that would be at that facility, and then it would have to be taken either to a transfer station or to a landfill. But it's primarily a recycling facility.
Oh, okay. Well,
but
I'm not sure that's what he, if he wants that, then we're good. If not, that's what the code only allows right now. We can't allow somebody to bring their waste there and then just take the recyclables out. Then that's a transfer station or a landfill.
That's not a transfer station.
Can we hear from Mr. Ferrillo again? Okay.
Not to be argumentative, but be to defend what I want to do. It's not a transfer station. Transfer station, it comes in, truck drops the garbage, it's loaded in live bottom trucks and shipped somewhere. We'll go through it to pull out the recyclables that can be pulled out. How can I say this? There's so many opportunities. Think of FedEx as an argument, for argument's sake, when they come here. I don't know what they're going to generate. Maybe some cardboard, maybe McDonald's wrappers. I'll make it fast food. We're right here. We're right where it's happening. We can take care of all this right here. There's a place in Texas right now. I think they make Toyotas. They've teamed up with Waste Management to help make fuel from this stuff. There's so many options we can do. But the key one, too, is do we want to save somebody some money, the taxpayer? And I think you'll find at the end of the day, I've mentioned this before with Catherine the first time we met. And I'm not one who's keen on public-private partnerships, but could you imagine if we partnered up on this thing? Public and private. You can come in and out of that facility whenever you want to see how it's being operated. You can make sure everything's done properly. Then when state of Florida comes out with another mandate one day that says you must do such and such, we're already doing it. We're right there with you, brother. I see a lot of potential. And that could be a pipe dream about us ever partnering. But what isn't a pipe dream of mine is to say, yes, this facility says recycling. I am under the guise of recycling. Dirty MRF, clean MRF, whatever you call it, as long as I'm recycling, I should be allowed to do this. That's why I purchased a particular piece of property, to recycle. And the code is somewhat vague, and maybe the intent back then was to, how can I say it, do the igloos, which is what the city of Ocala was doing at the time. There weren't too many of these facilities up and running. But I think you see it's the wave of the future, and it's a way to really eliminate all this material going to a solid waste landfill.
I got a quick question, if I may.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, just to respond real quick, what Glenn's talking about, too, is DEP, how they're classifying it, but what DEP classifies versus what the city code classify it. I mean, the code is clear that it has to be recycled products. It's not any waste. I mean, any waste that would be brought into it as a primary use in that thing would be either landfill or a transfer station, but, you know. So I think from the city standpoint, the code is pretty clear that there was no landfill, there was no garbage station or C&D landfill allowed in the code. That's why we were trying to change it back in 2009. And that's why I think a code change would be necessary. And I think Jimmy agrees with me, a code change would be necessary.
The question I have, if I can offer it, is Tygates and statistics that there are 6,755 city trips per year to the existing garbage transfer station at Southeast 52nd Street in US 441. Based on your concept, I'm asking this because I don't understand, and I want to clarify. Based on your concept, of those 6,755 trips per year to the existing garbage transfer station, how many of them would be rerouted to your recycled facility?
Well, right now you've got a contract with someone else. But if that was open for bid and I was a low bid on it, we'd have all those vehicles come in there.
So it'd be a truce. It would be a true garbage transfer station then, and not a recycle.
A true transfer station means you open your tailgate, the waste comes out, then it's loaded in another truck and taken away. We're there to recycle it. We're there to cut down the waste stream that's going and being transported to a solid waste facility, such as a landfill.
But just to be clear, that all 6,755 trucks, if you had the contract, would go to your site.
A lot of dump trucks. Remember how many dump trucks used to drive by that site from those pits? In the heyday, they're not there right now. So as far as if we're saying that we're going to impact the roadway, do this, do that, no, I
definitely. No, my question was, I couldn't, in my mind, I'm unclear. You keep saying recycling. I'm thinking traditional recycling. And what you're saying is recycling would be a part of your overall concept in that you would be taking the vast majority of the materials to some landfill somewhere that you had an agreement with.
You'd be adding a step to what's already being done.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, you're taking out you're taking the solid waste that's coming to your facility, you're taking out 10 to 15% that's recycling that was not put in our recycling flow before, and there's that solid waste left is going somewhere, then you're taking it to some undisclosed landfill. To us, that's a transfer station.
No matter whether it's, no disrespect, whether it's the Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, anybody that's involved with recycling, there's always a product that has to be transferred back to a landfill. You don't always get a clean load, no matter how you want to cut it. So in essence, if we were going at that same venue, same direction, if I had a facility that said I'm going to take all the city of Ocala's single stream recyclables and I'm going to process that, what would I do with what cannot be processed? It has to be transferred to a landfill. So if we hold that thought process, which we know is always going to be the case, there's always dirty garbage, for no better term, mixed with recyclables, we're in the same boat. There's no way to get around it. No matter who it is when we do recycling, you may have the best intentions that you're doing what needs to be done, but as soon as somebody contaminates that load, it's got to be shipped off to a landfill somewhere. It can't be processed. We want to do the recycling. What we can't recycle, yes, that will be transferred. And Matt, I feel bad because this is my livelihood. So if I ever sound like I'm talking down and out, please don't think I am. I just want to do what I can to make this work, okay?
Sure.
No matter who's doing recycling, you're going to have something left over you can't use. That's just the way it works.
Ty, help me out here because we're spending a lot of time, and I want to kind of wrap this portion up, and I know we've got other public comment on this. Are we talking two different things here? Are we talking, you're looking for direction on whether to look at further putting this into the code?
Right. I mean, right now, we can allow a recycling center. That means it's all recycling. Yes, there may be a small portion of it because of our single stream recycling, put something in there that they not should, but it's recycling. What Glenn is talking about is waste and recycled products, and then he would sort them at the facility, whereas a transfer station doesn't sort. They just move it out.
Right.
But that would be a concern because the transfer station, by when you move it out, you don't have many of the issues with the odor and the rodents and everything because the trash is not staying there. That's why I showed that picture. It's cleaned very quickly, and then it's moved, it's moved to the larger station. So it comes in, it's processed, and moved out. They may be doing recycling, but they don't really – that's not their goal, I don't think.
Well, let me tell you where I'm – just so I can get an idea, so we can wrap this up. In concept, I like the idea of what Mr. Fiorello is talking about. I like that idea where it comes in, you take it out, makes sense to me. That being said, what direction are you asking of us today?
Well, yeah, and I'm fine with that too. I'm just saying that it has to be, the code doesn't allow that use, that we would have to amend the code. And that's what I'm looking. Do we want to amend that code or bring forth an ordinance that would allow that type of use or that type of facility? And we could draft an ordinance and get input on that type of facility.
And Mr. Fiorello is saying that it already allows that, and you're saying
he thinks it is. We disagree on that, and the city attorney disagrees on it.
Yeah, just for point of clarification, this is very important. Staff is neither for nor against Mr. Fiorello's project, but it is staff's job to interpret the code, right? And as you know, the code identifies many uses, but there are many, many, many more uses every day that we see that don't exactly fit into the code. Mm-hmm. Ty's job, in part, is to interpret that code and make a decision. He did so in this case with Mr. Gooding's assistance, and both of them agree that what Mr. Fiorello is proposing to do does not currently fit in our code. So the next logical step was to come to you to say, well, what would you like us to do with this? Would you like to amend the code so that Mr. Fiorello could go forward? Or perhaps you would say, we have no interest in this project, but either way, his opinion and his job is it doesn't currently fit in the code, so we need some direction.
There's more than just Mr. Fiorello. There's been other people have contacted us about a facility in Ocala. So okay.
I guess the direction you're needing from us is, do you go forward and try to amend the code or redo it however you want to say it, and come back with different options for us?
Yeah.
Right.
You can't take a motion.
No motion. It's just we get a consensus.
Just as they put out in their option. Well,
I think that's what we're trying to do here.
Yeah.
And he's got a great idea, but we obviously, you know, with you and legal both agreeing, we probably need to do something to make this an acceptable thing in our code.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any other public comment on this? Angel better know your address.
Ira Bethea, 2657 Northwest 27th Avenue. I'm a citizen, and I live in the Northwest 27th Avenue area where Friends Recycling is. Friends Recycling is there. There's nothing I can do about Friends Recycling being there. I do have issues, and I do have concerns, and I'm not the only one. I'm just happen to be the only one here this morning with putting a MRF facility there. And I just want to share this with you, and I have done this before, but I live at Northwest 27th Avenue, and I have lived there in my home for 20 years, and I lived there since 1961 next door at 2647. And I remember when there was no dumping area, there was mining, lime rock and sand from Counts Construction prior to any recycling place being there. And like I said, some kind of way it got there, whether it was rezoned for it or whatever the case may be, that's in the past. I'm not going back there. But I want to deal with the present. The corner of 27th Avenue, Northwest 35th, MLK to Highway 27 or Highway 40 seemed to be the nexus of where the city or businesses want to put industrial parks. So having said that, it appears to me that the citizens that live in these areas has no say. Their homes are already there. But up pops a business here, and it's no longer a residential area. It becomes not a R1 anymore. It's a M1, M2, M3. So the citizens that live in these areas already, it makes no difference to the powers to be. And I'm saying somewhere that has to stop. Why not buy a plot of land, city or whoever, and make it an industrial park and put all of these things inside that area instead of putting it in the residential area? Now, having said that, I'm pretty sure you're not going to do it. So let me ask this. So it's about 12 homes in the immediate area around Friends Recycling and that place Mr. Fiannelli want to purchase or have purchased land. A gentleman a few months ago when we was up here about the same type thing said, why not buy the landholders, the homeowners out? Why not? Because you keep putting things there. Man, this Friends Recycling, the owner, him and I get along very good outside of dealing with Friends Recycling. But there's dust, and I'm sure there's bacteria, there's ash on my vehicles, and things of that nature. So my family is breathing this byproduct of and you talk to me about quality of life. What type of quality of life are these people getting that's living in these areas that got to breathe this stuff every day? And while you're thinking about changing the ordinance, changing the zoning or changing whatever, think about these families that live in the immediate area. Again, buy us out. I'd rather go build my home somewhere that I don't have to deal with this crap. And I'm sure that you all have heard this before. They're not building it in front of your house or in your backyard, but they're building it in mine. And I don't appreciate it. I'm hoping that you all will think about what is being said. And you know, business is business. And I understand business, and I understand about saving for the greater good. I understand all that. What I'm saying then, give me what my property is worth and stuff, and I'll get the heck out of there, and I won't have to deal with that anymore. And I'm sure the other people feel the same way. You just can't keep putting things in people's neighborhoods. You can't put it in the neighborhood. I'm hoping I'm not, you think I'm rambling, but I feel very, very deeply about this, and I'm hoping that you all will do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ira. Hopefully there's, we've gotten all the comment on this. Is there anybody else? Okay, Aubrey, let's move on to the Tuscaloosa Master Plan and, you know, the time constraints, because we want to get to the tennis at least.
And I'll try and be quick. Aubrey Hale, City of Ocala, Community Development Services. What I have today to present is the Tuscaloosa Master Plan, just trying to do an update on that. I'm going to try to review the process, the master plan, and you know the purpose of the master plan. as we're moving through and all of the city initiatives that we've been doing throughout the past couple of years, we've had, as you can see in the map, a lot of the downtown movements with Citizen Circle, Linear Park, as well as Gaslight and the downtown remodel. One of the other things that we're trying to do is look at Tuscaloosa Park and how that kind of matches in with both the downtown master plan and the Ocala 2035 vision. So we're looking at the park and how it kind of meshes in with the rest of the downtown. as we've been proceeding in the master plan, one of the first things we had to do was establish a mission statement and a set of goals. Now the mission statement that we came up with was the mission of Tuscaloosa Park is to enhance the quality of life by facilitating economic development, promoting the environment, and supporting recreation, education, and the cultural arts. We also had to establish, we also tried to establish a series of goals and basically this is gonna help outline what we're trying to accomplish in this area. So we have a series of the goals with right-sizing the park, establishing links to adjacent areas, making improvements that emphasize the water as organizing elements, trying to use local design elements, as well as encouraging private and public partnerships, and remove intangible and intangible barriers, include adaptable spaces that support activities at both the amateur and professional level, and to provide an environment for personal growth and social interaction. Now, what the goals helped us to do is, once we kind of, developed the structure for the master plan, we wanted to go out to the community and get some external design ideas or some visions. So with that, a design competition called Reinvent Tuscaloosa was created. We received approximately 15 design submittals. From that, the city, at the conclusion of the competition, reviewed those submittals and analyzed all of the pros and cons of each submittal and tried to filter through those. And thus we created the Tuscaloosa Vision. The Tuscaloosa Vision basically goes through, helps organize and visualize some of the identified improvements that we're proposing as part of the master plan. So you can see where there's some projects with the bubbles, kind of shows some locations as well as some possible phasing opportunities as well. Now after the vision process was completed, we started really diving into more in depth at the trying to get into the actual project and identifying all of the projects and the level of detail that we're going to have to add into those. It became kind of evident that there's two types of projects or ideas that we're really kind of going after. And one was, we divided them into two lists, essentially. Was one was based on more individualized projects, something that can be completed fairly quickly. And others would be more infrastructure projects, which would need to be completed more long-term and take a lot more efforts. So as you can see, with the project priority, we have an example here of one was an open pavilion, which basically this is a pavilion in Tuscola Park right now, kind of just to the south of the city auditorium. Going to propose to just kind of open that up, use that as more of a, it can be a leasable venue space. It can be for, bands, smaller things that aren't going to be as grand as what some of the other events we might try and hold there. We also have, under the project priorities, we'll have City Auditorium renovation, Discovery Center, Art Park, Senior Center, American Legion, and the Amphitheater project. Now, with the infrastructure projects, again, this is going to be things we have identified a few key movements in throughout the park. One of the things that we are proposing in this master plan is to close off portions of Wautula and Sanchez Avenue. Basically, this is going to help us, what we were envisioning was to right-size the park, which is one of the goals that we set out for, trying to make a more cohesive park that's going to be safer and more in a more functional environment. So that was part of, as actually shown in this circulation enhancement. The other infrastructure projects that we've included are the Osceola Linear Park Trail Hub, pedestrian park lighting, pocket parking lots, intersection enhancements, and water edge enhancements. So in closing, essentially what we've done, we've established the mission statement and goals, created the Reinvent Tuscola Design Competition, looked at the analysis, or we performed an analysis of the design submittals for that competition, and then used those ideas to develop the Tuscola vision, and then went in and developed a prioritized list of all the projects, and then actually essentially made those two separate lists. Now the reason, to get a little bit more in depth on that was just to, we didn't want to prioritize all the lists, all the projects as just one priority, because there's going to be certain ones that might be able to move up other, faster than others. But because of the dynamic of those projects, and certain projects can be just as important as others, but because it may take more money, more time, we kind of divided them into two separate goals. So with that being said, if we would like to get into any more of the projects and look at that anymore, Kathy is here to talk about that a little bit further.
Ms. Chilton.
You have down here the amphitheater.
Yes, sir.
The last item on the list. And the, if I remember correctly, the renovations of the auditorium with the symphony is going to involve a movable stage to turn that into an amphitheater. Is that a duplication of the?
Well, this one would be a little bit, this is going to play off of the American Legion.
Okay.
And it could be a space that could be solely leased for the American Legion. So it's going to be a kind of a space that can work together. And as well as it's going to provide other opportunities for us to hold, concerts
at the other end of the park.
Right. Because it's such a large area. We're dealing with about 50 acres within our downtown. So this kind of helps us to be a little more dynamic in our.
But you don't see it as a redundancy at all.
I don't think there are two different sizes of the spaces. You look at the city auditorium, it's going to be something that's going to be, they can be grand. 5,000-10,000 people. So this is going to be more an intimate setting. Somebody could actually just, rent that area out and do it for smaller venues. Okay.
Any other questions for Aubrey?
No, I just think we just need to continue. I think it's an exciting project.
Yeah, I think that's the idea. I mean, it's a slow process, but, kind of give an overall view.
What is your estimated cost?
Well, basically, right now, we don't have true estimates. Everything that we have done so far has just been kind of ballparks. I think you should have received the Tuscola Master Plan report. In there, we have a cost breakdown on each one of the projects. It's kind of almost set up like a CIP-based format, which would enable us to, as we're moving through the budget process, to kind of help expedite that a little bit. But we will have to further on those ballpark figures. I think with the project list, we are looking at about $6.5 million, and the infrastructure project was about $4.5 million for a grand total of right around $10 to $11 million. Now, this is the one thing to take out of all of this is that this is not something that's going to happen overnight. This is something that we're trying to meet the 2035 vision. So as we're moving forward, this is going to be a 15, 20, 25-year process. So this is just more of a budget forecast for 20, 35 years down the road.
It's really a roadmap to get us from point A right. to the 2035 vision.
I understand that, yeah. So
there's currently a good partnership going on with the Rotary and Discovery Science Center. Right. Do you see opportunities there that we can go out and expand right, that same venue with some other?
That's actually one of the projects that we've identified, and Kathy can speak a little more on that. Mm-hmm. But that is one of the projects we've identified as being one of the private and public partnerships.
Yeah, it seems to be working well so far. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mr. Muslin.
Matt, or Kathy, how much do we have in this year's budget towards the master plan for Tuscaloosa Park, if any?
Do you have the numbers, Kathy?
So I don't think it's in the budget.
In the current year budget, we have about $195,000, and that's actually some carry forward from 2013 for projects that carried into the new year, and then what we budgeted for this year.
What projects were they, Kathy?
The renovation of that building he showed you, the old original recreation center
right.
into
okay.
an open-air pavilion, power bollards in support of events in the park, and then the renovation of the, or adding lights to the playground.
Okay. Thank you.
That's the bulk of that.
Any further questions? Mark?
Real quick statement. You know, back in January of 2004, we adopted the Downtown Master Plan. That was really important because it gave not only citizens and potential investors a roadmap, knowing where we were headed. It gave them confidence that they could invest their money downtown. It also gave staff the direction to be able to bring back to city council every year, okay, we're going to do this project, and next year we'll do the next project, and we're going to design. It lays out, like Matt said, this roadmap. This does exactly the same thing. So the citizens and investors and staff, everyone knows kind of where we're headed. We may not all get there exactly when we want, but we've got the opportunity to move forward.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, you're like spot on. I mean, that's the exact question that Dr. Ford asked me when we went up there to do our presentation about downtown. And he said, how do I know this is going to happen? I mean, you're showing me this master plan and you're showing me all these things. How do I know this is going to happen so I can recruit people? I said, well, because we voted on it. This is our roadmap to do this. So, yeah, like you said, you know, we've taken a lot of turns and, you know, the timeline, what we, you know, originally thought it was, but it's the track that we run on, and it's what, you know, the citizens, you know, agreed to and voted on and supported, and we just need to keep moving in that direction so people know what we're doing.
Well, that was kind of, you know, a lot of the purpose for this the way that we developed this master plan was that it is fluid. Things can be maneuvered around as, you know, as need be, so that's kind of one of the main things, and it was kind of challenging. But I think we try to develop something that will, you know, allow for that, you know, to be adaptable.
Aubrey, thank you. I apologize we cut you short a little bit on the whole time thing, and I think we're probably going to move on to tennis now. And I apologize, we're probably not going to take public comment on the Tuscaloosa Master Plan today, just because we need to get the tennis in at least.
Kathy Crowell, Recreation and Parks Director. I want to acknowledge that the proposals for tennis and the skate park have been vetted through the Tennis Advisory Board and the Recreation Commission, and we have members from both the Tennis Advisory Board and the Recreation Commission here today. Also, we have representation from the county and the county's PRAC committee here today, in case we get to that point and anyone has any questions. I'm not going to go through each of these reports individually. I'm going to quickly review the conclusions and recommendations of the reports and the projects. Individually, we can talk about a little bit in the recommendation part, but basically going to give a collective overview of our prioritized recommendations based on the findings and conclusions in those reports. So we'll start with the tennis center evaluation. The existing court lighting system, and these are the conclusions that staff came up with from after our evaluation and in the report. The existing court lighting system is antiquated and it needs to be replaced to meet current standards. Additional parking is needed to accommodate regular play. Junior development programs require hard courts. On the contrary, most adults prefer to play on the softer clay courts. League play has increased tremendously at the local and national level, which has placed a heavy demand on the existing clay courts. Fort King can't meet this current demand for primetime court time. The community currently has a deficit of 1 to 9 courts, depending on which guideline you apply. We have NRPA standards, and then we also have USTA standards. We have a projected deficit of 7 to 21 courts by the year 2035, if no additional courts are added. The city only provides clay courts at the Fort King Tennis Center, and the county has no public clay court facilities. Fort King Tennis Center is currently operated by a contract tennis professional, and it's currently a self-sustaining program. In the tennis report, we provided 6 separate alternatives. The first was to choose one of 5 expansion options that were presented, and the price ranged between anywhere between about $750,000 to $1.4 million. Obviously, we want to acknowledge there's probably another 200 alternatives we could consider, but we were just trying to come up with an evaluation of the different price ranges. Another alternative presented was to not expand the existing facility at all, but to just relight the existing courts. Alternative C was to replace the existing on-site hard courts with clay courts and upgrade the lighting at a cost of $480,000. This option would require relocation of junior programs to off-site locations. Alternative D is the same as C, but adds a junior facility clubhouse at Tuscaloosa Park for a total cost of $650,000. That's not just for the clubhouse, that includes the cost you see in Alternative C. Alternative E is to demolish the existing tennis center and construct a new one right where it's at a cost of $2.1 million. And then the final alternative presented was to upgrade lighting at the existing facility and construct a new facility with 8 clay courts and related amenities somewhere else. This was at a cost of $2.6 million. So if money were no object, staff's recommendation would be option F, to upgrade the lighting at the existing facility and construct a new facility with 8 clay courts and related amenities at a cost of $2.6 million. Obviously, we like that option because it provides the necessary upgrades to the existing facility, and it also provides 8 new clay courts to meet current and future demands. But money is an object, and this isn't the only project we're going to talk about. So as we go to the skate park evaluation, I'm going to review those conclusions. Neither the city or the county currently has a public skate park. Based on industry averages, there's approximately 3,800 skateboarders in the city and 22,000 of them within the county. Based on industry standards, the local community needs 48,000 square feet of skatable surface to meet citywide needs and 120,000 square feet to meet the countywide need. Total square footage would typically be divided throughout the city and or county, not just in one location, into a skate park system. Staff has determined that Scott Springs is an ideal location for a skate park, not only in terms of where it's located, but because of what else it can provide for us in terms of opportunities at Scott Springs. The city needs 1 to 3 full-size skate parks to meet the industry standard, depending on which standards we apply. Safety and liability issues are addressed in the Florida statutes in terms of a municipal operator, owner and operator of a skate park. And the cost to construct a skate park and related amenities, which minimally address the local need, pretty much gets us started, is $900,000. So if money were no object, staff would recommend the construction of an 18,000 square foot skate park at Scott Springs at a cost of $900,000. But money is an object, and it's not the only project on the table. Tuscaloosa Park Master Plan, just to give you an overview of the projects for which the wheels are already moving. We have a group picnic pavilion, power bollards, and other miscellaneous infrastructure that's currently under design, getting ready for construction at $195,000. That's currently in the budget. We have renovation of the city auditorium into a culture center in partnership with the Ocala Symphony Orchestra. Fundraising's underway. The city's short-term commitment is estimated at $50,000, in 2015 for permit fees and parking design services, and $310,000 in 2016 for parking construction. And then we have the Discovery Center renovation, which has been going on for some years now. The design is about 90% complete. Phase 1A is currently underway, should be completed actually by the end of this week. That includes upstairs ceiling insulation, HVAC, and painting. Phase 1B is estimated at $250,000 and will be budgeted in 2015. This is for an elevator and exterior painting. The elevator obviously meets the ADA requirements. And the remaining of the renovation is estimated at $600,000. So when we start to look at how we would prioritize these projects, we have a couple things to consider. The first is, how do we provide high quality venues to meet the local need with limited funding, and how is that an economic driver? We do understand we have to prioritize. We understand that a high quality of life is going to attract businesses to locate here, which drives our economy. It's also going to attract higher educated citizens who then would attract different types of businesses to our community. And the types of projects you would look at to meet this type of goal would be the Fort King County Center or a skate park, and some of the individual projects that you see at the Tuscarawas, at the Tuscarawas Park. But the next question is, how do we best position Ocala Marion County to compete for those athletic events that in and of themselves generate economic activity, and what's the most appropriate funding mechanism for that? Before we make decisions in this regard, we need to do a comprehensive evaluation, not just a if you build it, they will come approach. It's important for us to be able to have the conversations on emerging and or unmet field and court sports needs, and the need to apply those into a larger facility that can meet the local need, but that we also know will be an economic driver. We believe that conversation needs to involve the county, the city, the county, and the Tourist Development Council, not just the city acting alone. So understanding that we have to prioritize, I'm just going to go through staff's recommendation. I understand that you might have people in the audience who have a different recommendation. You have before you letters from the Tennis Advisory Board and the Recreation Commission on their recommendations, which, again, we worked with them in preparing our recommendations, so you're going to find that they mirror each other. As to tennis, staff would recommend upgrading the lighting of the existing courts in the current fiscal year. We would convert two of the existing Fort King Tennis Center hard courts to clay courts, and then add two additional clay courts. So basically you get four additional clay courts and you'd have two less hard courts. This is similar to an option you saw in the plan, I think, that maybe was option one, but we were able to save $50,000 by not demoing all the hard courts and then having to build two new hard courts. Construct a junior tennis clubhouse at Tuscarawas Park to facilitate junior programs off-site in 2015. And then staff would evaluate alternatives and apply for possible funding assistance over the next 2 years. As to the skate park, we recommend issuance of an RFP for design build of an 18,000 square foot skate park at Scott Springs, with the design part funded in 2014. We would fund construction phase in 2016, and again, staff would evaluate alternatives and apply for funding assistance over the next 2 years. As to Tuscarawas Park, we would fund Discovery Center phase 1B, elevator and exterior painting in 2015, fund the permit fees and design services for the Ocala Symphony Orchestra parking in 2015, fund the Ocala Symphony Orchestra parking construction in 2016, and fund the balance of the Discovery Center renovation in 2017. Again, as to the larger issue related to those facilities that might have a bigger pull for tournaments, we would recommend that the Recreation Commission and the County Parks and Recreation Advisory Council begin a conversation with TDC staff and try to develop a plan for moving forward. So basically, this next slide you see is how all of this recommendation looks in a funding plan. So in working with the budget office in determining the funding that we might have available for these projects, I understand that we would have, at best, enough money to get us through the Fort King Tennis Center hard court conversion and parking drive reconfiguration in 2015. That would leave the junior tennis clubhouse unfunded in 2015. Anything moving forward, we don't have the resources to construct. This includes the parking lot that we've committed to for Ocala Symphony Orchestra, which, as you know, has come forward since we started the evaluation of these other facilities. So I'm presenting this to you so you understand there's a difference between Kathy, who would like to see you put all your money in recreation and parks, and Kathy, who has to live with Cindy, and understanding that there's other priorities. And I understand you are going to look at this from a city standpoint, the bigger picture of what we have to do citywide, as opposed to just my picture of recreation and parks. So I wanted you to understand, if we fund through the hard court conversion project in 2015, we will have depleted the funds that are available for any other projects, not just recreation and parks projects, but any other project that is not currently funded through 2015, and we leave the Ocala Symphony Orchestra, anything in 2016 forward, we don't have the resources to provide.
Kathy.
From my point of view, before we do any other projects, I want to see us upgrade the tennis center because, number one, I see how many people play at the tennis center. I see what kind of an economic driver it is and how beautiful a facility it is and can be. And before we start on skate parks and other things, to me, I think we should do that correctly. And one of the things that I was looking at, and you know, the price of option one and option two, was that it seemed like there was a lot of money in there for the drainage retention and those things. And you know, I really believe that that portion should come out of water and sewer, and for them to move the drainage retention.
So, just so you know, in this latest proposal, which you have in front of you, I believe we've eliminated the need to relocate that retention area. We would possibly have some stormwater discharge. You should have one in front of you. This is the one where, if you look at the drawing, there you see the bright green courts to the right. Those are the hard courts. Mm-hmm. Instead of demolishing all those hard courts and then building four new clay courts and then also building so originally we planned we would demolish these, put clay there, and then we would build two hard courts somewhere over here. Well, now we've decided that in order we could save two of the hard courts, so we're saving $50,000 by not having to rebuild those hard courts. Build two clay courts where two of the hard courts are, and then build two more clay courts. Get some sidewalk configuring we have to do, and then build a construct a parking lot over on this side. And just so you know, Stormwater paid the golf program some years ago for all of the stormwater retention areas that you see there and the ones that they have on the golf course that don't serve just the golf course.
Right, and I'm aware that they did, but they also used the entire golf course as a giant drainage retention pond. So, I mean, that could be said several different ways. But I guess from my standpoint, I want to see this facility upgraded because it really hasn't been. How long has it been?
Well, we renovated the, are you asking when we last resurfaced the courts?
I mean, when do them close to USTA specs, I mean, I'm assuming that's what we're planning on doing, making those courts to specs or whatever.
Well, I'm sure the courts were built to the standard that was in place at the time that they were constructed. I understand there's issues with the way they were constructed, but I believe they meet the need. It's an issue of how many courts.
Right.
And then the lighting is not to standard. Again, it probably was to some standard that was in place back then, but over time, lighting systems need to be replaced. Those light systems can't even replace just the fixtures because the poles are too short.
And the new lighting system would be even more efficient than what is there now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Councilman Musselman.
Just a quick, the lighting system, is it the original lighting system?
Yes.
Those courts were constructed in 1972, if I remember correctly.
Somewhere around, I don't know that for sure.
One of my first jobs was working out there, so.
I know, it's been a long time.
I have vivid memories of dragging that scraper up and down the clay courts.
So without getting into a big debate about tennis versus skate park, because I'm sure we have some people here who might have opinions like you, I realize that you're seeing the demand here. If you had a skate park in place, you'd see the demand there too. You don't see the demand for the skate park because you don't have a skate park.
Well, I'm not against the skate park, but I don't want to do one halfway we can build a skate park. I want to do this one correctly, and then as we get the funding, then we, you know, I think Scott Springs actually is a great place for the skate park, considering how close it is to movie theaters and Easy Street and the mall. Don't get me wrong at all about the skate park. I just think we need to take care of what we have.
All right, I got a question on the skate park. I mean, so the $200,000 that you're proposing to spend is just really for the design stage. It's
correct.
Not, there's no brick and mortar at all.
Right? Absolutely, and so that's a very good point.
Wouldn't you think that you'd want to postpone that expenditure until you knew you had the funds set aside to actually follow through with the construction?
So one thing a design does give us is something that we can use as a tool to go out there and try to potentially solicit private partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
Because honestly, where in the foreseeable future do you see us having the funding to build a skate park? And, you know, that's an issue that's definitely bigger than me. We're out of money. As far as recreation and parks development projects, if you want to move forward with these projects, then we need to come up with a plan for how we're going to fund those, because unlike the electric department and the water sewer department, we don't generate revenue that we can then turn around and set aside for capital projects. So it's definitely a larger than me problem.
Yeah.
And I'm not the only one that uses some of these sources, just so you know. There's neighborhood enhancement fund. We use some of that for recreation parks projects, but it's also used for code projects and other things too. So,
Mr. Mayor,
just a quick question. Now, these four parks that you are, I mean, courts that you have highlighted there, those are currently concrete courts. You're going to make them into clay?
So these four.
Yes, those.
Those are the hard courts.
Right.
We're proposing to leave these two. Can you see where I'm pointing on your screen?
Right, yes.
As 14. Hard courts.
Right.
These two would become clay courts, and we build two more clay courts here.
Okay, and I'm kind of looking at the scale you've got there. There seems to be plenty more room to put two more courts there.
Dean, retention here.
You could potentially, there's a retention area here, and so when we start to divert this water, then we are talking about adding to the cost of the project.
Okay, I didn't realize that was a retention area
there.
Yeah,
and we're a little limited here because we do have an easement to this condo.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, if you moved it back a little bit, but okay, I see. And then that becomes parking where you've got it highlighted over there by 16.
It made sense, and you know, when you're preparing your first 15 versions of how this might look.
Yeah.
But in this 16th version, it made more sense to us to have the parking over here because it is closer to the clubhouse. Before
right.
We were talking about putting it over here, and you know, there is a distance to, I realize you're gonna get out and do a couple hours worth of exercising, but
sure.
People like to park close. And so there, you know, it's a lot closer to the clubhouse. It makes more sense. Plus, if you live right here, you'd probably rather have the parking lot there than to have tennis courts with lights burning all night right next to you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Councilman, do you have any more questions?
Just to add a couple of things. In looking at this here, to your point, we need to move forward with this here because we've already got something that's well established.
Yes.
But years ago, I heard of some group, a not-for-profit organization that wanted to try and hold a tennis tournament in town, similar to a golf tournament. There was not enough courts.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a strong possibility that this could be an economic boom for us for something like that, like we bring in the Little League and things of that nature. Not to say that the skateboard park wouldn't do something like that at all, but you know, then we look at the demographics of the retirees looking for more things to do. And they could also skateboard, for all I know. I mean, but, you know, they are looking for different things. But the skateboard park will then lend itself to the BMX, the inliners, and things of that nature. If we build a skateboard park, what do we do for those people? So I think we need to kind of work on this focus first and then look for something like that. I realize, you know, the object of the skateboard park would take the kids off the street because they have no place for it. But I think this should be our number one priority to move forward on this year.
And also, this design, you know, it would still have to go to an engineer and
oh, sure.
an architect, and it
this
would be tweaked.
This is Kathy's little version.
Tweaked, and this is your version, right?
Yeah.
Your idea of how it would work.
Right.
We get something more concrete when we went the architect and, of course,
absolutely.
An engineer. Mr. Marlowe, do you have a question?
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, I dropped in on Kathy in her meeting the other day with the board, the rec board, and they really were very passionate about all of this that they put together. And they realized that we don't have the money to do it. If we did, we'd have it done immediately. But it just did me good to sit there and listen to the passionate and the expertise that she has on that board. And Kathy, I think you're doing a good job, and you got a great board there.
Thank you.
If we could, we've only got about 8 or 9 minutes because both myself and Councilman Muslick both have to go. If we have some public comment, if there anybody wants to speak in the next few minutes. Chief.
Maury Dean, 2836 Southeast 25th Terrace, Ocala, Florida. I saw where you were going to be talking about these different options, and I have long been a proponent for this community to have a skate park. Our young people need it. These are the people that are inheriting this community. And I've talked to many of them over the years, and I don't have to tell you all the things that we have bought, but I can remember the days when I had a problem with us putting a park out the other side of the airport when we needed it down here where the kids are at. And I know that you got a lot of priorities. It's not an easy situation. I think the study that they did is as fine a study as I've ever seen done on something. I've looked at these things all across the country, and you've done an excellent job of putting the options, the costs, the considerations, the liabilities, every issue you addressed. And I really applaud you for that. It's an excellent, excellent study. I just say that, please give that serious consideration. It should be a higher priority for this community. The young people don't usually ask for a lot of things. And they're also ones that oftentimes don't have the money to go play golf and go play tennis and go play these other things that people in the community that use it do have the money to do it because they end up paying for it anyway. But Ocala is ready to do something visible for the youth of this community. And skateboarding is popular. Almost 4,000 kids just in the city, and that doesn't mean the other ones come. I think the options, the alternatives are excellent choices. So I just come as a citizen and somebody that has seen the effect of this in cities all across America, large, small. I mean, I've seen them out in the sticks in the desert in New Mexico, but they know it's important. And I applaud those people for knowing that it's important to reach out to those kids. It sends a message. And when you look at some of the options that they've given, I would question $200,000 in design work. I bet you to say, with some of the folks that we know in this community, there's some folks that would do that work and donate it, that we could put $200,000 into the park and get something done. So anyway, that's all I've got to say. I just, please give it a higher priority. We've had golf, we've had tennis, we've had all these things. We keep pushing that aside. And I think it's time for us to step up to the plate and start giving it some priority. And I think that if it was done right, that if they had the chance to get something started, that they could then form some groups in the community to help do some future funding and fundraising and partnerships and those kinds of things, so that it doesn't have to always just be the taxpayers picking up the bill on these things. So I would ask you to give it serious consideration.
Thank you, Chief. Is there any other public comment? Name and address, please, for the record.
Earl Schwartz, but I'm here as the chair of the Defense Advisory Board. Do you still need my address?
Yes.
1082 Northeast, 130th Terrace. First of all, I want to compliment Kathy. She did most of what I thought I was going to have to say. I do want to make a couple of points, however. In terms of the youth, the growth in youth tennis in Ocala alone has been phenomenal lately. I don't have the numbers. There is a director who could speak. I don't think I see Ebony here. Ebony, there you are. It's been growing in leaps and bounds. Not only that, but also in young adults. The tennis program that Jason, Mr. Weiss, has put on is growing by leaps and bounds. And ever since I've been on the board, and even before, the two main problems have been the lighting, which it sounds like we are going to address no matter what, and the lack of available clay courts. Virtually every meeting that I go to at the Tennis Advisory Board, there's a complaint that it's too hard to get a clay court, and I can't get a clay court. And part of the reason for that is the success of the USTA program with leagues. The leagues not only have to play there, but the people want to practice. And so the leagues take up the courts day in, day out. If you want a court, you have to call a day ahead of time, between 8 and 8:30 if you want it in the morning, between 8:30 and 9 if you want it in the evening. And it's not unusual to start calling at 8:30 and not be done, not get through till 9, only to find out that all the courts are already taken. And that happens day after day after day. So it is a problem. In terms of bringing other people in and is it an attraction for Ocala, I can tell you that when we moved to the Ocala area, I looked a lot of places around Ocala. And I had four criteria. One was access to decent medical care. I'm getting older. One was availability to get to both coasts. Another was no bridges freeze before roadway signs. You know, that those were still there in Jacksonville. And the other, and not I don't mention it last because it's least, I mention it because I want to emphasize it, was I wanted an active tennis community. I looked at Dunellen, I looked at Mount Dora, I looked at a lot of places around here, but every place I looked, they said, well, if you're really interested in tennis, look at Ocala. And I ended up in Ocala. So it is a very important thing. The last thing I want to say, I'm making this quick, is that the recommendations that we had, first of all, do not conflict with Kathy's. We don't need to get rid of all four courts. We just wanted to make sure we got four new clay courts. And what she's suggesting would do that. Getting rid of two of the hards and putting in four new clays would be fine. But that is still a short-term solution. It will deal with acute current problems. But the real need is to develop something long-term with an extra facility. We just don't want that to be lost sight of. This is a short-term fix. The clay courts that we do have, I am told, were not put in properly, and the basis, the groundwork for it, requires much more maintenance than would normally be required of clay courts, and getting that fixed would be a priority in my mind as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have time for one more, if so needed. If not, we probably need to wrap this meeting up.
Yes, for the record, my name is Bill Ray, 2712 Southeast 29th Street, Ocala, Florida. Just recently, Kathy had me nominated to sit on the Parks and Rec Board, but also been very active with various planning activities that have gone on with the city, starting with the City Vision. One of the things that we look for when doing planning and economic development is how to leverage our existing assets. Whether you know it, if you've not heard, the United States Tennis Association, USTA, and its Florida division has identified Ocala, Marion County, as being one of the top three tennis destinations in the state of Florida. If you're a tennis player, the United States Tennis Association is saying that Ocala is one of your destinations. So when looking at economic development, it is leveraging your existing assets and building upon them. What Mr. Schwartz had said was the ability to do the maintenance we're talking about and the limited expansions with Fort King is well deserved to address the existing demand that we are currently experiencing in that facility. The next is what Kathy had brought up, is looking of leveraging what's already going on and how do we address where we want to be in 4 years, in 5 years, in you know, as far as economic development. This community is already branded as one of the top tennis communities in the state of Florida. That means that Florida is one of the largest sections in the United States Tennis Association. So that puts it up in one of the top tennis destinations for the United States. Whether we want to be labeled that way or not, that is our economic development. Now we look across the board in Florida, what we see as a trend is building sports facilities as a means to for economic development. The other one that's coming up quickly on the agenda is filling the niche for lacrosse and field sports activities. If we're looking to leverage and bring in the community of the 25, you know, the 25-year-old creative class generation, the companies that want to relocate here for an existing high quality of life, to provide that those services is what they're looking for. They're looking for the competitive sports for themselves and for their kids. They're looking for healthy outdoor activity. And again, one thing we didn't mention about Ebony and her activity in USTA is that she is was recently elected as one of the top volunteers for establishing youth programs in the state. And so these are the assets we need to leverage. These are the ones we need to build upon and augment. But those are the things I would emphasize. What we're doing right now with the Fort King Tennis Center, clearly within line of what the vision of what we wrote and prepared that document, and then turn back around and look at expanding and partnering with the county and providing a regional center for field sports activities that would bring in both Marion County and ourselves, but build on that destination. Thank you.
Well, no further comment because we're going to have to end the meeting. I just want to make one last comment. I mean, you know, I want to try to find a way to do both. This is not skate versus tennis or anything like that. These are things that we need to have in our community. We need to find a way to do them. That being said, we can make that a priority during our strategic retreat and, you know, look at ways.
I was going to suggest that.
Yeah, I could feel you. And we can just find a way to make them both happen and within reason, everything's possible. So with no further comment from council members.
If I can just verify the takeaways from today's meeting, let me drop back to the garbage transfer station. What I heard the council ask staff is to, one, ask Pat to opine on the Viola agreement, to identify possible off-ramps to the agreement. Two is bring back a proposed ordinance to allow for a garbage transfer station in some select zoning designations. I also heard someone say another work meeting on trash. Is that still desired?
I would think so.
Sometime,
I felt a little ambushed today by...
Yeah, sometime in the future. Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of issues concerning trash that we probably ought to take a look at.
Later in the calendar year?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be, there's no rush on it.
But. Okay. Those are the takeaways from the garbage transfer station discussion. Moving on to the recreation and parks. First is bring back the master plan to a subsequent council meeting for adoption and approval. And finally is to place on the strategic retreat agenda the discussion item of prioritization and funding for tennis and skate park facilities.
Right.
Well, I think we want to go ahead and get the lighting done at 14?
Well, I think you need to do it all at one time if you're going to redo the courts.
But we've got it in the budget.
The lighting is not in the budget. We pulled.
We pulled that from the budget?
We pulled it out, and because you guys wanted to have further discussion before we made a decision. And we don't have to. We can light the existing facility in advance of doing the additions. So whichever direction you want to go, we can. I mean, obviously waiting a month isn't going to make a big difference if you want to wait and have a conversation at the strategic meeting. But if you want to proceed, then we need to bring forward probably a budget resolution to get the money out of reserves into the budget.
Okay, we have it in reserves.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, okay.
It didn't disappear.
Okay.
We have funds in reserve for projects that are not currently committed.
Okay.
Okay. Why don't we, my suggestion, how you guys feel, just let's have this conversation later in the month at the retreat.
It's only 2 weeks away.
See if we can't find a way to do them and do them both.
My only argument is we know we're going to do the lighting, so why are we waiting? Get it on the agenda and approve it. But if you want to wait till after the strategic plan, I'm fine with that too. It's not going to make a big difference.
Well, you're, what, week and a half, 2 weeks?
That's prompted a thought, Jay, is that, you know, for adding courts, that would impact, of course, the lighting design. And so from that perspective, you may want to wait.
I mean, okay. I think there's got some engineering issues there that would have to be looked at first. I'm not an engineer, but anyway. Nothing else? We're adjourned. We got to get back to the